Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will offer an update on the case of Amy Bradley. She was the topic of a Netflix docuseries titled Amy Bradley is Missing. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the incident, then offer my analysis. Amy Wynne Bradley was born on May 12, 1974, in Petersburg, Virginia. She was raised by her father, Ron, and her mother, Iva, and had a younger brother named Brad. Both her parents were insurance agents. Amy graduated from high school, where she had been active in various athletic endeavors. She attended Longwood University and graduated with a degree in physical education. Amy worked for a steakhouse and lived in an apartment in Chesterfield County. According to an ex-girlfriend, Amy came out as gay to her parents, and they were not happy about it. In March 1998, Amy's father, Ron, told her that the company he worked for gave him a 7-day cruise on the Royal Caribbean vessel Rhapsody of the Seas. The cruise was scheduled to depart from San Juan, Puerto Rico. After this, it would visit Aruba, Curaçao, St. Martin, and St. Thomas before making its way back to San Juan. Day number 2 and day number 5 were sea days. The prospect of going on a cruise was not particularly attractive to Amy, but eventually she became excited about making the journey. Now moving to the timeline of the incident. On March 21, 1998, Amy Bradley, along with her father Ron, her mother Iva, and her brother Brad, departed from San Juan, Puerto Rico on Rhapsody of the Seas. The ship had only been sailing for a year at this time, so it was a new vessel. By today's standards, it is not especially large, but in 1998, at 915 feet long, it was considered massive. All four members of the Bradley family shared the same stateroom. It was number 8564, so deck 8, port side, slightly aft of midship. This is a 243-square-foot junior suite with a 66-square-foot balcony. On March 22, the passengers of Rhapsody of the Seas enjoyed a day at sea. On March 23, the vessel arrived in Aruba. The Bradley family spent some time on the island before returning to the ship. That night, Amy and her family attended a formal dinner party. At about 1 a.m., Amy's parents, Ron and Iva, walked to the stateroom and went to bed. At around this same time, Rhapsody of the Seas departed Aruba and started sailing toward Curaçao, which is only 70 miles away. Amy and her brother Brad stayed together, dancing and consuming alcohol. A man named Alistair Douglas, who was a member of a ship band called Blue Orchid, danced with Amy. At 3:35 a.m., Brad returned to the stateroom and went to the balcony. At 3:40 a.m., Amy arrived at the stateroom. These times are known because data from stateroom door locks are recorded when key cards are used to make entry. Amy went to the balcony and spent some time with Brad. She mentioned how Alistair Douglas had been flirtatious. After a few minutes, Brad decided to go to bed for the night. He said that Amy remained on the balcony, saying that she didn't feel too good. Brad entered the stateroom and shut the sliding glass door behind him. At about 5:30 a.m., Amy's father, Ron, looked through the sliding glass door, which was still closed, and saw Amy's legs. She was sitting in a chair on the balcony. At around 6 a.m., something woke Ron up. He noticed that the balcony door was open about 12 to 14 inches, and Amy was missing. The yellow shirt that she had been wearing that night was sitting on a chair inside the stateroom. Her sandals were on the balcony, but Amy's cigarettes and her lighter were missing. Ron left the room, believing he could find Amy somewhere in the ship, but he could not locate her. He returned to the stateroom and told Iva what happened. The Bradley family notified the crew that Amy was missing. Right after this, at about 6 a.m., Rhapsody of the Seas docked in Curaçao. Initially, it didn't appear as though the crew of the vessel was too worried about Amy's status as missing. They didn't want to make an announcement because it would disturb the passengers. Instead, they agreed to make a voice page later at 7:50 a.m. The crew did not prevent the passengers from disembarking on Curaçao. Rhapsody of the Seas was thoroughly searched. The crew concluded that Amy was not on board. Fearing that she may have traveled overboard, Coast Guard vessels searched the area, but they did not find Amy. After 4 days, the search was discontinued. Rhapsody of the Seas continued with the itinerary as scheduled. It departed Curaçao, sailed to St. Martin, then to St. Thomas, before finally returning to San Juan, Puerto Rico. The FBI investigated the disappearance of Amy Bradley. Here is what they found during the course of their investigation. The three remaining members of the Bradley family, Ron, Iva, and Brad, were interviewed. Investigators concluded they were not suspects. By the time the FBI boarded the vessel, it was already in St. Martin. This was on March 26, 1998. Stateroom 8564 had been cleaned, so evidence may have been destroyed. The balcony had two chairs and a small table on it. Investigators noticed the table was pushed up against the glass of the balcony railing. There is no way to know if it was in that position when Amy disappeared, because it may have been moved when the room was being cleaned. Two young women told investigators they saw Amy Bradley with Alistair Douglas just after 5:30 a.m. on March 24. This was around the time that Amy disappeared. Again, Alistair was the band member who danced with and allegedly flirted with Amy. The women said that Amy and Alistair were in a glass elevator, which took them to a nightclub that was closed. 15 minutes after seeing them get off the elevator, the women saw Alistair walking on the pool deck alone. Investigators were unable to confirm the timeline provided by the women. Data recorded on Alistair's cabin door lock indicated that he used his key card to enter his cabin at 3:35 a.m. This was 5 minutes before Amy Bradley used her key card to enter stateroom 8564. There is no way to know if Alistair or Amy left their rooms after arriving. However, their arrival times are consistent with the idea that they went their separate ways after dancing. Investigators spoke to Alistair. He denied any involvement in Amy's disappearance. In the Netflix documentary, Alistair's daughter, Amika, was interviewed. She claimed that her mother told her that Alistair once came home with a bag containing pictures of white women. With cameras rolling, Amika called her father and asked him about Amy's disappearance. Alistair denied any involvement. This was kind of ridiculous to include in the documentary. It appeared as though Amika was just trying to grab onto a tiny, almost microscopic, sliver of fame. It reminds me of that phrase, 15 minutes of fame, except this was more like 15 microseconds of fame. In 2005, 7 years after Amy Bradley's disappearance, images of a young woman resembling Amy were emailed to her parents by an organization that helped people victimized by human traffickers. Evidently, members of this group discovered the images on a website. The photographs do look quite a bit like Amy Bradley, but there is no way to be certain. Investigators were not able to uncover any information about the website. They had no idea where the images came from. On March 24, 2010, 12 years after Amy's disappearance, she was declared legally dead. At the time I'm making this video, Amy Bradley remains missing, and the investigation into her disappearance continues.
Sie wollen endlich durchstarten und planen den nächsten Investitionsschritt? Dann setzen Sie auf den Sachsenkredit Universal der Sächsischen Aufbaubank. Mit einem Tilgungszuschuss von bis zu 10% für KMU, Existenzgründer, Freiberufler, große privatgeführte Unternehmen sowie Ärzte und Apotheker im ländlichen Raum. Für Investitionen bis zu 20 Millionen Euro. Mit erleichtertem Zugang zur Förderung. Alle Infos online unter sab.sachsen.de/sachsenkredit-universal.
Now moving to my analysis. The Netflix documentary about Amy's disappearance was released on July 16, 2025. There wasn't a lot of new information about the case in the film, but there was enough to justify re-examining the theories in this case. The documentary did offer some new details surrounding events that were already known, so it provided some context that may be useful. It also talked a little bit more about Amy's emotional state at the time of her death. With this in mind, let's take a look at the main theories about what happened to Amy Bradley and evaluate the factors that support and contradict these ideas. Theory number one is that Amy Bradley accidentally went overboard from the balcony of stateroom 8564. There are quite a few factors supporting this theory. The last place Amy Bradley was confirmed to be was on that balcony. She was tired and intoxicated. She did not feel well. The table was up against the railing as if it was used as a step to get over the railing. Maybe she was leaning over the railing to vomit and lost her balance. Amy's sandals were on the balcony, and her identification was in the stateroom. There have been no confirmed sightings of Amy after her disappearance. When she went missing, several passengers recognized her because, as a young person, she stood out. This particular cruise appealed to an older crowd. If those people had seen her disembarking, they probably would have remembered her. As far as the factors that contradict this theory, an investigator in Curaçao believed that the current should have pulled Amy's body back toward the island if she went overboard, so searchers would have found her body. Amy's cigarettes and lighter were missing. If she fell overboard, those items should have been left behind. Theory number two also involves Amy going over the balcony railing, except with this theory, the behavior was intentional. Amy's inhibitions may have been lowered due to her alcohol consumption. She was going through a difficult transition in her life. Perhaps this led to an impulsive decision. As far as factors that work against this theory, Amy had a lot to look forward to, including a new apartment, a new dog, and she had a new full-time job lined up. Theory number three suggests that Amy Bradley was somehow kidnapped, either by force or coercion. This would involve a scenario where Amy was confronted by criminals after leaving the ship voluntarily. Looking at the factors that support this theory, three waiters on board the ship invited Amy to a bar in Aruba when the ship was docked there. Amy thought the invitation was creepy. Was this some type of setup to get her in a vulnerable position? The onboard photography service maintained an area where the pictures of passengers were publicly displayed. About 10 hours before Amy disappeared, all the photographs of her went missing. Did traffickers take these photographs to show potential customers? Two women said they saw Amy Bradley with Alistair Douglas after 5:30 a.m. This does not mean that Alistair did anything wrong, but it does support the idea that Amy was not in the stateroom at this time. A taxi driver in Curaçao claimed that Amy Bradley approached him, asking where she could find a telephone, but then she walked in the other direction when he pointed toward a telephone. If this is true, then Amy made it off the ship alive. A Canadian man named David Carmichael claimed that he saw Amy on a beach in Curaçao in August 1998. He was 100% positive it was her. Even the tattoos matched. She was with two mean-looking men who appeared to be controlling her. One man gave David a nasty look, as if to indicate that David should stay away from the woman. In January 1999, a U.S. naval officer named Bill Hefner claimed he encountered a woman who identified herself as Amy Bradley in a hotel brothel in Curaçao. She told him she was being held against her will, claiming that somebody was holding her papers. In March 2005, a woman named Judy Maurer was visiting Bridgetown, Barbados, when she went into a women's restroom and entered a stall. She heard two men enter the restroom and confront a woman who was using a different stall. When the men left the restroom, Judy talked to the woman, who seemed scared and was hunched over a sink. The woman told Judy that her name was Amy and she was from West Virginia. As soon as she said this, the men came back into the restroom and forced the woman to exit. In the Netflix documentary, operators of a website about Amy Bradley claim that IP addresses from Barbados were overrepresented, like a lot of people from Barbados were looking at the website. The traffic was higher on days that may have been special to Amy, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, and her mother's birthday. Now moving to the factors that contradict this theory, Amy Bradley did not have her identification with her. It was in the stateroom. Why would she leave the ship without that? None of the Amy Bradley sightings have been confirmed. Some of the reports contain elements which undermine their credibility. For example, Bill Hefner said that the woman claiming to be Amy Bradley said her papers were being held, but all Amy's documentation was accounted for. And Judy Maurer said that the woman she encountered claimed to be from West Virginia. Amy was from Virginia, not West Virginia. In all likelihood, human traffickers would not be interested in somebody like Amy Bradley. These types of criminals often target women who have been forgotten by society, women who are addicted to substances, indigent, or destitute. Amy was not in any of those categories. A criminal would know that taking her would initiate a massive investigation. If they did choose to kidnap her, they certainly would not post her image online, allow her to walk on a beach, or to use a public restroom. When considering all the evidence in this case, how would I rank the theories from least probable to most probable? In my opinion, I think that theory number three, kidnapping, is the least likely. Then I would go with theory number one, Amy accidentally went over the railing. Finally, the most probable theory would be number two, Amy traveled over the railing intentionally. I don't believe that Alistair Douglas had anything to do with the disappearance of Amy Bradley. During my first video on this case, I rated Amy intentionally going overboard as less likely than an accident or a kidnapping, but the documentary contained some information about her state of mind, which changed my evaluation and my ranking of the theories. Amy had really been struggling to manage her romantic feelings and her relationships. Young people are more likely to be impulsive. Strong negative emotions only increase this impulsivity. When Amy added alcohol on top of this, she made herself even more vulnerable to making a poor decision. Now moving to my final thoughts. The case of Amy Bradley has attracted a lot of interest, in part due to the possibility that she was kidnapped. I have covered a large number of cases where people go missing under mysterious circumstances. Many involve people claiming that they saw the person after the disappearance. These sightings are almost never confirmed. I think what happens some of the time is that people just get caught up in the excitement of the mystery and truly believe they saw the person. They are desperate to be connected to something interesting and compelling. They want to be part of the action. In other cases, they may be lying for financial gain or simply to seek attention or fame. At least one person definitely lied to Amy's parents. In the fall of 1999, a man named Frank Jones contacted them and said that Colombian gangsters were holding Amy on Curaçao. He falsely claimed to be an ex-Special Forces operative and said he would help them get their daughter back. The Bradleys paid him $210,000 and flew to Florida to await news that Amy had been rescued. In February 2002, Frank Jones was arrested. 2 months later, he pleaded guilty to mail fraud and was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Con artists are always looking for people who have strong emotions about a particular topic. This is yet another reminder that intense emotions rarely lead people in a helpful direction. Those are my thoughts on the case of Amy Bradley. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.